Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal. I'm here in the kitchen with a special guest today. We're going to talk about sweet corn. What a nice thing to talk about this time of year. The Donalana Kitchen happens on this very own community radio station, and we get along with your goodwill, your donations, your energy. We're all volunteers. This is your radio station. Thanks for tuning in.
Support comes from Wheatfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatfield Co-op.
And we certainly do. That was Ray Olson. He is our special guest today. He knows all there is to know about sweet corn, I think. And we'll be talking about corn. Let's celebrate the month of August. August is named after the first Roman Emperor Augustus Caesar. And the goddess of August is Demeter, or Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, Ceres, the goddess of the harvest, obviously. Yes, lots of things to harvest now. Anglo-Saxon name for this month is the Wodenmonthe, vegetation month. Everyone is looking forward to harvest, and with all the rain we've had in Iowa, there is going to be lots to harvest, I think, this year, unless the rain gets a little bit too much. American backwoods traditions call this the sturgeon moon or the corn moon. In Europe, it's also called the barley moon, but then we must remember that in Europe, they didn't have corn originally, and corn was the name referred to everything from wheat to barley to rye to oats, all that sort of stuff. Everything was corn, so you harvested your corn. And maize showed up, and now that's corn too. We think of maize as corn here. In Celtic tradition, this is the month of Lunasa. Remember the Meryl Streep movie where she played one of many sisters, and the movie was called Dancing at Lunasa. It's the harvest month. And here's something that describes this festival. It's a Celtic poem. We can get a little carried away with harvest and fecundity this time of year. A poem. Heaven, earth, sun and moon and sea, fruits of the earth and sea stuff. Mouths, ears, eyes, possessions, feet, hands, and warriors' tongues. This is a very powerful time of the year. Here's some sayings about the month of August. As August goes, so next February. And a fog in August means a severe winter and plenty of snow. Oh, dear. Immediate weather concerns of the forthcoming harvest are much in need here, so another saying is, dry August and warm does harvest no harm. And my dad always had a corn saying, and I don't know where this comes from, but he told me that one plants corn when the oak leaves are as big as squirrels' ears. So we all take note of when to plant things, and corn is very important and has been very important not just to Iowa, but to the whole continent of the Americas and now all around the world. So, Donna, welcome.
Oh, shoo.
She's slid in here, and here we are.
I've been busy in the kitchen.
Oh, what did you do this weekend? You've been busy all over the kitchen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we had the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition have their summer meeting in August. Now, these are the folks that are, they are the organic policy wonks, so
okay,
to speak.
Okay.
And they actually are a group of all of littler organizations all over the country, and not so little, like PFI, Practical Farmers of Iowa, is one, and IATP, which is International Trade Policy, Ag Trade Policy. That's one of the groups. There are quite a few of them. Midwest Sustainable and Organic Educational Service, Organic Farming Research Foundation. So each of these groups is, you know, always has to lobby Congress to get more sustainable dollars, you know, put towards actual farming research and that sort of agenda. Beginning farmers, that kind of thing. So these are the people that lobby in Washington on the behalf of, like, genetically modified labeling and no pesticide drift and all the things that we care about. So they've been they came to Iowa, and we fed them all Iowa food. So they had organic pork, and they visited the Franzenberg farm over in Van Horn, where they have a marvelous greenhouse. Ann brought me, Ann Franzenberg brought me these cucumbers. They must have been 2 feet long. I mean, we were making cucumber jokes, you know, obscene ones, right?
Oh, of course, of course.
So we had some lovely blueberries from the berry patch, of course. So we had a really lots of Iowa beer and bourbon.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of lemonade, we made, because this is not lemon country after all, we made a kind of a semi-tart cooler with rhubarb. So
Very good
time was had by all, and it was about 80 or 90 people. And, yeah, there's a little chaos in my kitchen today.
Well, welcome back, and I'm glad all these folks are well-fed because they have a mission to go out and lobby our government. So the best to them, the best to them. All right, we're here in the studio today to talk about sweet corn, and joining us today is Ray Olson. I've known Ray for quite a long time. He's a fine fellow. Ray Olson is a farmer and educator. He sells corn. He grows chickens. He's a farmer and educator in the Greater Ames area. He can answer a lot of questions because he has a master's degree in science. So welcome. Welcome, Ray.
Well, thank you, Lana and Donna, for your invitation to come in today. It just couldn't escape me as I thought back to the Duck's Breath Theater and their introduction on having a master's degree in science. And I think they also did a program called Chicken Man. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that probably touches your heart. I mean, corn and chickens, you do them both and do them both well. That's lovely. You can find Ray at the downtown Main Street Market in Ames. He's there with his corn, and the corn is lovely.
Oh boy, is it. And he grows three varieties, three colors.
Yes, I had at the market this week, we had All White, which is has a really boring name, 3174. Like, that's really
just rolls right off your tongue.
And then Vision has a little more colorful name. It's an all yellow kernel corn, but it is delightful. It has a little more corny flavor. Would you say that,
Donna?
Oh,
I got some of each. I gobbled them all up, and of course they were all great, but I'm a traditionalist. That yellow corn was fabulous. As long as you have it, that's what I'm eating for the rest of the summer.
Okay. Well, I have six more plantings, so you're good.
Oh, hallelujah. Yeah,
you're good for that.
And what's the third kind of corn? You said there were three kinds.
The third kind is our most popular, which is a bicolor. And a lot of people who are not corn fanatics refer to it as peaches and cream.
Okay.
Peaches and cream is really just a subset of bicolor corn.
So there
are probably 150 bicolors. The one that I happen to use is called, are you ready to be bored?
Okay.
Extra Tender 277A.
Got that, folks?
Write
that one down and request it at the grocery store,
and,
right?
Make sure you have a record of that. It's a hybrid developed by Illinois Foundation Seeds, which was at one time affiliated with the corn breeders at the University of Illinois. My other alma mater.
Oh, there you go. And you said you're an educator. Who do you teach?
Well, I have just finished my master's work in ag education. Before that, I was working as a substitute and taking on most classroom areas. Probably my favorites would be special ed and science.
Ah, right.
Like high school science?
Yes. Oh. High school, middle school. Yeah, so it'd be secondary.
So are we going to revive the high school level ag programs?
Well, that's a good question.
Future Farmers of America?
Oh, FFA.
Yeah.
FFA, Inc. They are still around. There are programs in most of the rural areas. There are some, Des Moines, I know, has brought back their ag programs. And so ag education is probably seeing a regrowth. And there are
good.
Lots
we,
of...
We can continue to eat into the future, do you believe?
Eating is a good thing. I enjoy it.
Highly recommend it.
Quite often.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably more than I should. but it, we could use a lot more, a wider representation of the population involved in agriculture.
Yes, I believe we are going to be sorely lacking in farmers in the next few 10, 15 years, right? The average age of the farmer is now something horrifically above 60 or something like that.
It's pretty close to 50, yep, to 60, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you then you can narrow the field a little further when you talk about farmers that actually own the land.
Oh, well, that's a whole nother matter.
Yeah, and then you get into contract agriculture and.
Let's talk about something more pleasant. Tell us about your farm, and why do you grow sweet corn?
Sweet corn has always been a challenge, I guess, for me. Ever since high school, I was starting to grow sweet corn for our family when I was in high school, experimenting with different varieties.
Did you grow up on this farm?
No. I was actually raised in another state.
Not too far distant, I hope.
Well, I had to cross the Mississippi to get here going west. Okay, she's thinking.
I can't even think that far.
Illinois.
Oh, I'm from Illinois, too.
Oh, okay.
But we don't talk about it very frequently.
We have two defectors.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I grew up really close to the river, so I was almost from Iowa.
Well, before our move into Iowa, I had always held the opinion that those people who went past the Mississippi River should have stopped earlier. I've had to change that now because now we're in the sweet spot.
You are here now.
So, yeah, raising sweet corn, there are a lot of challenges. Sweet corn is different from field corn.
Well, thank heavens.
Yeah. And part of it goes back to, and I'm thinking this is early 1900s, when they discovered the SH gene, which is a gene for sugar that differentiates sweet corn from field corn. And then since then, they've been able to, through traditional breeding methods, create some really fantastic varieties.
Yes, most toothsome stuff, you could say. Really sticks to your teeth.
This SH gene that was discovered, it was in nature to start with, or it was bred for?
It was in nature, probably happened through a genetic change, mm-hmm, a little depending on whether it's good or bad, you would call it a defect or a trait.
Naturally. We're talking about genetic modification, but it's the natural kind of genetic modification. It's all corn within the corn. You're not bringing in some other foreign genetic material.
Right.
And this is what happens in nature.
Yeah.
Through and careful selecting and time, lots of time.
Yes, a lot of time involved in and doing the basic research and the legwork and identifying plants that have the traits that you want.
Like you go through the field and you eat a few ears here and there and a few more and you pick the sweetest ones to save for the seeds, right?
And somebody had to do the tough job of
tasting all that corn.
Tasting all the different corns to find out what they prefer. What sets apart probably the variety I grow is called another put your thinking cap on. augmented super sweet. So
augmented super sweet, is that
augmented
how much
super
sweeter
sweet.
Can we get here?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it could get so sweet that it probably wouldn't grow.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So you have to. So there are some parameters.
You could just shoot a sugarcane gene into it, don't you think?
Oh, that's a thought.
Now that would be transgenic modification.
If I think so, I think they're a little far apart on the genetic scale there.
So basically, how does corn work? We find it this time of year on the back of pickup trucks and at farmers markets, and we all love to eat the stuff. But how does one small seed get to turn into this really handy package sort of thing with green packaging on the outside with fuzzy stuff on the top, and we peel it and we eat it? Or we peel it and we cook and we eat it. How does that happen?
And for those in our radio audience, Lana is looking at an ear of corn with the silk, brown silk on one end. We've got the leaves, the husks.
It's a rather picturesque, perfect piece, isn't it?
If you open up, you can see a few kernels there towards the end. Now, you'll notice this is all...
This is the corn tearing noise. Shucking. We're all shucks, folks.
Notice how well pollinated. It's clear to the end.
This
has been just an ideal year for growing corn.
Oh.
And a lot of it has to do...
Is that my favorite yellow one?
There are...
Oh, no, that's
that's the bicolor.
Peaches and cream. Okay.
Yeah. That's the 277. But this has been, as I mentioned, this has been a great year. There are two things that corn just loves. One is lots of fertilizer. Well, I guess there are three things then. Or, as my friend would say, there's one, fertilizer, two, water, and C, heat.
Oh, boy.
So he couldn't keep his alphabet numbers apart.
So what is the purpose of the silks? It seems to make it rather hard to eat to have all those silky bits in the ear of corn.
Well, part of that, cleaning the corn, that could be a training issue. There are ways that when you're cleaning corn that you can get about 99, 44, 100ths of the silks off.
Just with a fingernail brush.
But why does the corn need the silky bits?
All the parts. Okay, here we get into physiology. Hey, we're even going to talk. I don't know. Do you guys talk about sex?
I think in terms of corn, we can deal with that.
Okay.
I think the FCC allows
it. It's a reproductive issue, right?
So the reproductive parts of the corn are the tassel, which has the pollen.
Way on top of the plant. Way up there.
Which has which is the male version. And then we have the ovum, which we, once it's been pollinated, develops into a kernel. So in some ways, when you look at it in ear of corn, it really is fascinating that every last one of these kernels that developed had to be pollinated. And
individually.
Individually.
Oh.
And so these silks, every one of those is a little tube that transfers the pollen down to the ovum or the...
So each kernel has its own silk?
Each kernel has its own silk. Yep.
And guesstimate how many kernels to a good old ear of corn?
Well, most varieties, they talk about rows.
Mm-hmm.
And for reasons in genetics that we don't have time to deal with today, there will always be an even number of rows. The rows will always be in twos.
Oh, really?
So, for example, it would be 10, 12, 14,
so
16.
So what do you think this one is? 20?
Well,
18?
2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18. We've got 18 rows.
Okay, I was right on the money.
Yeah.
18 rows.
Okay, so now.
18 by.
Off comes the husks. So,
this also brings up the theory of how to best eat the corn. I am a I am a right-to-left, follow-each-row corn eater when I eat a cob of corn.
She would be. Lana's very organized.
Yes. And now my husband, and we look at each other, they're saying that this is the wrong way to – he just kind of turns it around and takes bites any old place that is handy. So I don't know.
I think I'm very organized.
Right.
I'm afraid I fall into that category myself.
I am the organized left – well, right to left. I can't – it tastes different left to right. So everybody has their own way of eating corn. What did you come up with numbers here?
So, you know, there's also typewriter.
But that's left to right. I'm right to left. There we go.
I see a concern. Yeah. Okay, so we came up with 18 rows. I counted in German 30.
About 30.
So we're looking at 540 kernels.
Per ear.
Wow.
So that's – and if you – let this stay on the plant and dry, that would be your seed for next year.
Correct.
Ha-ha.
Yep.
Have you ever done it? Have you ever saved your own seed? Or?
No. Most of the corn varieties that people grow today are hybrids.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with hybrids, if you save the seed, you're not going to get...
You'll get something else.
Yeah, you're going
like
to get...
bananas or something.
If you do a Punnett square... and it shows all the traits, you're going to have probably 10 or 12 different types of kernels, and only a small percentage would be the ones that you like.
Oh, there you go.
So, but there are still some varieties. I guess you could call them heirloom sweet corn, maybe, that would be open pollinated, that is not hybridized. But it's not as sweet. It's not as tender. It lacks a lot of the... traits that we've really come to enjoy and appreciate.
Well, do you feel there are fashions in corn, like the bicolored corn is highly fashionable now?
Well, it depends on what part of the U.S. you're in.
Well, let's talk Iowa, Illinois, since that's our territory.
I would say the bicolors are probably the most popular now.
Yeah.
I would say the next big thing is going to be the yellow, especially since they've made such progress.
Oh, we get to go back to yellow corn again, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because it was yellow when I was growing up. Then there was, and that was 60-some years ago. And then white, with they kind of started doing white sweet corn in recent memory. And now bicolor. So we're going to swing back to yellow again.
I think there's a good possibility for that. The way I describe my the yellow version that I grow is that it has a cornier flavor.
I think it does. I think it has a more.
Yeah, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Now, the white corn, I know on the coasts, white corn is the big thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now the west coast, the other coast, as some people say, they're starting to go now to the bicolors and being most popular. I have a sister out in Washington State. And that's the big thing out there now. So if there was a way I could ship corn out there, that it would arrive in good quality and it would work, she'd love it.
Yeah. Well, it does taste like I did a short stint of living in New Mexico where they had a white corn that was unbelievable. And that's what everyone ate there. But it doesn't taste the same as our white corn here.
Yeah, this is probably a lot sweeter. Was that more of a milling corn?
No. Actually, it was a very sweet white corn that they were growing, you know, some variety that did well in that climate, I guess.
Yeah.
It was dry. But so the corn flavor is affected by the temperature and the quality of the soil, of course.
And I suppose it could be the soils.
Yeah. Well, we all like our corn. I'm going to take a little music break here and celebrate another use for corn. This is called Kentucky Whiskey.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI, Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. We are talking today about sweet corn with Ray Olson. And we've been talking about the steamy side of the sexual reproduction of sweet corn, which leads to pollination and all sorts of things. And all sorts of things happen. And there are things like rootworms and earworms and all kinds of ways to deal with them. And Ray, can you talk to some of this?
Well, this is where a lot of the challenges come in raising sweet corn, especially if you want to extend the season. Now, for...
So you're making successive plantings, right?
Right. On our farm, we do 11 plantings.
11, count them.
So in the spring, we'll space them around 11 days, and then as you get into June and July, it's down to 7 to 8 days apart.
Oh, okay. And that's so that you don't harvest it all at once and we can keep buying it from you.
Right, right. And so that's extending the season. So there are years that we've actually sold fresh-picked sweet corn on October 1st.
Oh, my.
Last year we got frosted, I think about the 15th or 18th of September, and so that cut it off. But extending the season like that is also very hard to do, and that's part of the challenge of it. And
the guessing game.
Yeah, it's kind of a guessing, kind of a science, and an experience and best knowledge. Two of the big challenges are weed control. Obviously, you have to keep that area that you're going to plant on July 10th. Weed free, so it's going to take either cultivation or chemical control. And the other one is bugs.
Bugs.
Bugs. There are two bugs that you really have to worry about with sweet corn. And this is what makes, if you're only going to grow one crop of sweet corn, that first crop, life is good. There'll be a few bugs. Don't have to sweat it. Don't need to treat it. You might have to trim a couple of ears off the end, but you really need to do that to put in the corn thingy anyway.
Oh, so. Right, because when you peel it, when I peel it and I find a worm in it, I know it's a good ear because the worms somehow know the best ears to pick.
Well, and so are some of the ears that never made it to the table because the raccoons selected them.
I was about to ask about that. That is a major pest problem.
Yeah, raccoon and deer are the other big bugs that bug us.
So how are you dealing with that?
An electric fence.
Does that work on the raccoons?
It does. Two things. One, it deters a lot of them. And the other ones, their teeth are still chattering by the time they get to the corn, so they don't have a chance to eat as much.
This must be a high-voltage fence.
Yes. Yeah, it's around, I think it's 15,000 volts, 4 joules. But the amperage is so low that it doesn't stop their heart.
And do you have multiple heights, one for the deer and one for the coons? And
yeah, the one for the raccoons, I've done both a single 6-inch and then I've a double, another 4 inches up.
And what
and
works
then
the
for
best?
The deer get the rope at the top. So I like to see their shoulders jerk when they hit it.
And is one wire enough for the coons or two?
I think I'm going to be doing two more. But I have...
They're awfully clever.
Much like my parents and grandparents, we are averse to extra work. And so that's been a tough one. Committing that extra labor to putting up more one wire.
But as you mentioned, it gets, as you're doing many different plantings, I'm sure the word gets out not just with the deer and raccoons, but also the bugs must kind of realize that more corn is coming, more corn has been planting. You talked about corn rootworm and corn earworms. Which one is the one that
you find when you peel the when you shuck it and you find a worm?
Okay,
it's kind of like the prize in the check in the crackerjack.
Yeah, jack. The mm-hmm. one that's at the larval stage is an earworm.
Okay.
Now, the parent of the earworm is a moth. It's kind of a dusky, grayish yellow. If you drive out in the rural areas this time of the year, they get all over your windshield. That's the corn earworm moth. And they lay eggs on the silks. And they prefer, now here on the table, as you can't see, we have
the green
silks and the brown silks.
Well, I prefer the green silks myself.
Yeah. Okay. And so do the.
I can understand why.
The earworm moths. So they lay their eggs on the green silks, and then the worms, as they hatch, migrate down into the ear inside the.
They follow the Silk Road, right?
Follow the.
I couldn't resist that.
Follow the green silk road.
Yes.
Yeah. Follow the green silk road. And so when they get down in the ear, then there's nothing we can do other than trim the ear. Mm-hmm. Now, with doing several plantings during the year, what we have to do is use a pesticide if we want to control the earworms. And depending on the temperature, those eggs hatch mm-hmm. every 3 to 5 days. In August, with these temperatures we have right now, it's necessary to spray every third day.
And what are you spraying?
I happen to use an insecticide called Tombstone.
And sounds delicious.
Yeah, that sounds like, and it's a tombstone for earworms.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so there's no confusion there.
And where do you spray it? On the?
We spray up over the plants, and it drifts down, and our target is the silks, mm-hmm. the fresh silks. So that when the larva hatches out of the eggs, there'll be enough of the insecticide to kill the larva.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the very early season, you know, corn that's planted, oh, say early mid-April to mid-May,
mm-hmm.
There aren't enough moths to cause that much of a problem.
So is that what's being harvested right now?
No. What we're harvesting right now
was planted when?
Probably about the 10th of May. Well, maybe I'm going to have to retract. Anything planted before the 1st of May probably
won't have those moths.
Right. Wouldn't have the populations increase as the corn develop.
So talking about growing corn organically, considering we're in the middle of earworm and corn rootworm heaven here, that's pretty impossible, except for the later plantings. Early plantings can be organic, no sprays or no chemicals.
Yeah, and that's what makes it more difficult to do successive plantings without that. And again, weed control, not so much the issue. The other pest, other main pest, and I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but I think Lana may have, is the corn rootworm beetle. Now, this little guy, this is the adult that we're worried about here. Mm-hmm. With the earworm, it's the larva that we're worried because it gets in and eats kernels. Well, the corn rootworm adult beetle, in the larval stage, it eats corn rootworm, hence the name. But in the beetle stage, what happens is it goes after the green silks and clips them, cuts them off. And so that can interfere with pollination. So if we're not controlling those corn rootworm beetles, you could have an ear which would consist of a cob and nothing. There would still be silks, but there won't be any kernels because none of them would have been pollinated.
That wouldn't be very delicious, would it?
It's not nearly as tasty.
Oh. So what are the organic solutions to these things?
Well, I know that they have experimented a little bit with using vegetable oil and BT, but that did not turn out well. They were having problems with pollination.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if your plant in the earlier part of the season, you can get by just trimming the ends of the ears. I don't know of very many organic producers that produce late season sweet corn. So I don't know if it's impossible or it's maybe mm-hmm. beyond my experience.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, are there GMO sweet corns?
Yes. Now I have to refer to it as Donna's favorite corn, Vision,
the yellow
all yellow corn, has a genetic variation on that includes the Roundup Ready gene and the BT.
But that's not what you're growing.
Right. I don't use that version of it. And that enables a producer to use Roundup or glyphosate, which would be the genetic equivalent, or generic, excuse me. And then it does give some protection for rootworms, but it does not control the corn rootworm beetle, the adult. You'll still have silk clipping. And it doesn't control earworms because the way the genetics are done with the sweet corn, only half of the kernels would carry the BT gene.
So then why would a farmer want to plant the GMO sweet corn?
I suppose there are some advantages from the standpoint of weed control would probably be the main one. And maybe if corn rootworms are a problem, there would be some advantages with some of the BTs. But that's usually, you can usually deal with that using crop rotation. And that's what I do with all of my sweet corn is I rotate that land with soybeans. So I have a crop rotation set up.
And if a consumer like me, who doesn't want to eat genetically modified food, how will I know if the sweet corn is genetically modified or not?
Well, I guess you're going to have to depend on the producer who you get your corn from. Pardon?
Just ask whomever you buy it from.
You would check with them. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, for a couple $1,000, you could take it to a testing lab, and they could tell you.
That's a bit extreme. I'll just ask
the
farmer.
Well, I'm just trying to cover all the bases
for
you.
Okay.
Or you could employ some earworms and see how long they make it.
Oh, that's true. Just keep a few of those worms around, and if they don't die within 2 weeks after they've eaten the corn, then the corn's okay for me to eat, right?
Right, and then it should be danted and inedible.
Yeah,
that's good.
Okay.
That's good.
You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about sweet corn today. We'll have a little bit more music here. This is called the Logan County Blues. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're here in the studio with Ray Olson. He's talking about sweet corn. The growing, tending, picking, and getting to all this stuff to market sounds like a real challenge. How do you deal with it all? What is the perfect timing to get corn that tastes really good onto your plate to eat it?
Well, the first step is probably knowing when to pick it.
Ah.
You don't want to pick it too early. You don't want to pick it too late.
So do you go out and strip a few ears down? Is that how you tell?
Kind of a combination of that and experience. I can tell.
You can pinch the ear and know what it feels like?
Yeah, you can kind of tell by gripping the ear. And, and again, I'm familiar enough now with varieties to know when it's ready. Some varieties have a larger girth to the ear, and you can tell that way. And then just to check on my own experience, I will check a few to see if it's consistent. Now, we're looking at the end of an ear of corn here. Here are some that didn't pollinate. See,
not
so they
very
never.
Very many, yeah.
Not, yeah, there's like five or six.
Five out of 500.
So that's
what
it looks
bad.
Like. It's just looks like kind of a little empty green shell.
That's kind of a natural thing to happen. And considering a ear of corn, like you said, had 540 kernels on it, the fact that a few didn't germinate, that's fine. So here I am at Farmer's Market, and people are always pulling back the ears. And how do you pick a good one, Ray? How do you pick a good one?
Well, probably the things that you're able to do by the time it gets to market are limited.
You can either buy it or not buy it.
Yeah, buy or not buy. The critical phase is from the time that it's picked when we in essence, we kill it.
There we go.
And the time that you get it.
And the less time, the better, right?
The less time, the better, and the lower the temperature, the better.
Okay.
That's why whenever possible, we try to pick the morning, not the day before that has all the heat in the ear. Because what happens, and again, I hope your ears don't glaze over here, but from a chemistry standpoint, once the ear is taken off the stalk, the enzymes begin to break the sugars down to starch. So that conversion process, as soon as that crack off the plant happens, that process starts. So what do you do to slow it down? You refrigerate it. You keep it cool. You keep it from warming up. So if you want good corn, again, I guess you're going to have to trust the grower that they have cared for it between the time it was harvested
and
the time
that
you get it.
Can you look at it like by how dried the silk is, or is there any way of really knowing how fresh it is by just visually inspecting it?
You could look at the silks and the husks, see if you have kind of a natural color. If it's turned gray, it would be maybe a day or two old. But even then, it can fool you because if it's been refrigerated, the quality will stay there. So anybody that wants to buy the freshest sweet corn, it either needs to be picked that morning or it needs to be refrigerated as soon as it's picked. So, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but that first 2 hours or so is the most critical. So if it gets heated up for 2 hours, and then you put it in the fridge.
Have refrigeration at your farm, or do you just pick every morning?
We pick each morning, and then I have a cooler that will bring the temperature down in a trailer to about 40 to 45 degrees.
Oh, so that takes the field heat out of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that takes the rest of the field heat. Now, if you want to store it for more than 2 or 3 days, it needs to go down to about 33 degrees.
Wow, that cold, just
but
above.
But I don't store very much corn.
You sell it.
I try
so
to get
we can
it sold.
Eat it.
And, you know, some that doesn't sell goes to the food pantry, and, you know, there are lots of other people that can make use of
eating
of the
sweet
corn
is one of the absolute pleasures of Iowa in the summertime. Remember that some of the country, you have to, like, ship the sweet corn in, and we can get it relatively fresh. I think.
Well, thank goodness we're very corny here in Iowa.
Yes,
if we don't have good corn in Iowa, it's not going to happen anywhere.
That's right. And steaming this stuff, I have a steamer is how I like to do sweet corn.
Me too. I don't even like to – some people like to actually boil it in the water. I put a small amount of – like an inch of water in the bottom of the pan, put in, you know, even a whole dozen, slap the lid on, and steam it right up.
Mm-hmm. How long?
As little till it's done.
Oh.
You can kind of – in a lot of the varieties, you can kind of see the color change
a little bit. Yeah, and it does depend on the variety and the ripeness, too, how long. But I think overcooking is a sin, basically.
Oh, yes. Oh.
Just barely cook it.
Yeah, there are some things that overcooking is really a bad idea. The one that comes to mind, broccoli.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would put green beans in that category. And I think corn is best – I mean – I have to confess, I also like to eat it raw. But just barely cooked is my favorite.
And now's the time of year to think about freezing or canning or preserving that sweet corn for later because it sure is coming on beautifully now. So I steam a lot of extra ears that I can eat, and I cut it off with a knife and put it in a freezer bag and put it in the freezer.
Now, what about grilling? Do you have a technique where you throw them on the grill with the husk on them?
Yes, I got from some friends of mine. They soak it in water.
That's what I wondered. So how long do you open it up at all, or you just throw it with all the leaves on it into the water?
They just immerse the ear, let it soak for about an hour.
With the silk and everything?
No, we left the silks on.
Uh-huh. So you just throw the whole thing in water, big tub of water.
Soak it for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then put it on the grill, and you want to be a little careful about the heat so that it's, you know, maybe a, I know for some kettle grills, about 350 if you have a gauge on there.
Mm-hmm.
And put the lid back on, try to... And roll it around. And the husks are going to char a little bit, but that's
right.
Okay.
So you're really basically steaming it in the husk.
Right. You're steaming it.
Yeah, that little bit of char is actually quite nice. I like that.
A little good. I mean, there is another technique where you actually strip it down. Just put a light coating of oil or not and very quickly grill it. You know, so you've got char marks on the corn.
On the corn itself.
Yeah, and I've also seen people cook it in, you know, those big tumble rollers that they use for peppers?
Oh,
I've seen corn cooked that way, too. Those big drums.
Oh, a rotisserie
type and thing. The flame is underneath, and you just keep turning it, and it's all tumbling in there and cooking. That's also another fun method.
Now, if, for those people who are trying to save time, and meet all your nutritional requirements, an earworm would actually be helpful when it's on the grill because you'd have your
protein,
your vegetable and your protein and your meat all at once.
It sounds like a real handy sort of thing, Ray.
So, however, most people prefer to have their vegetables and their meat separately.
I understand. In culinary circles, there's been a lot of focus on insect eating lately.
Yes, there
has. As the coming source of protein.
And I've been avoiding that, but I suppose, I mean, we've learned to eat
just
chicken.
Another concept that we have, you know, we can change.
We can change. That's
and
true.
It depends on how hungry you are.
That's
true. I think it also depends on how well seasoned the insects are.
Yeah. Well, and are they at their prime?
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Big, fat, and juicy, something like that.
Good. Having some raccoon or some deer with your... With your sweet corn, I think, is only fair, and that's good.
Yeah, I don't know about the raccoon. A good deer sausage.
Have you never eaten raccoon in your life?
Well, actually, I have one right now. Can you give me some pointers?
Barbecued coon.
Barbecued raccoon. I assume you skin them first.
Yes. Actually, growing up... I had cousins from Missouri, and they were hunters, and we would occasionally have barbecued coon. And there's a rule that you have to leave the feet on the coon so people will know it's not a dog.
Oh, okay. Well, I would be worried about that one.
We have a caller.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have a question? Who are you, please?
I have a friend of mine that has a farm out in Gilbert.
Yes.
Or at least a partial farm, you know, like a private farm. and she grows corn.
Yes.
And I remember listening on the Garrison Keillor show how the best way to pick corn is to boil a pot of water. You run out there and you pick off the ears you want. You shuck them, you toss them into the boiling water for 3 minutes, and you pull them out, and then you butter them and salt them if you want, and you eat them right there.
Eat them right there, right there.
Lickety split.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That is the best corn recipe I've ever heard. Thanks for the great advice.
Okay, you're
thanks
welcome.
For the great advice. Good,
I'll tell
good.
That she can listen to your show some more, too.
Oh, good, good.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for calling, Ron. Right.
We've been talking to Ray Olson, and he's told us everything he could know about sweet corn. It's a wonderfully complex sort of thing, and now is the time of year to really enjoy it. Thanks for being on the show, Ray.
You're welcome.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. We'll go out with some more music. This one is called... this is called The Sandy River. This is music by the Freight Hoppers. You've heard more of them earlier in the show. Contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. Let us know what's on your plate. Support this station. Celebrate sweet corn in Iowa. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.